This week, we go to Colorado to score some weed. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 67. Today is January 17th, 2014. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Hey, welcome back. Happy New Year to all our listeners out there. I'm feeling a little feel a little unprepared here because I didn't print out the normal stuff and I'm really feeling inadequate because Rob's sitting here with a full page of notes in front of him.
I have notes on notes.
That is just nuts.
He brought his own pen.
I brought
too.
A pen that I could click to my heart's content.
Woo!
It's going to be a bad night.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so this episode is entitled Returning to Our Roots. We've done 60-plus episodes now. So one of the things we wanted to try to do is kind of get back to where we were with episode one when we were first establishing this podcast and what it is we were trying to do here, which was essentially, you know, provide different perspectives on various topics, but then in the end, find common ground, something that we could all agree upon. And that is perhaps something we have failed to do as of late.
Yeah, Rob.
Jeremy.
So what we're going to do is just go around the table and, I don't know, spew random nonsense. No. We're going to...
That's different from any other episode.
Right, yeah, we're trying to change it up. I forgot. Rob's going to lead us off, and he's going to talk about some of his core beliefs and what makes him approach the issues the way he does and why he is our liberal on the panel. So, Jeremy will go next. He's got some notes here. And then I'll follow up and tell both these guys why they're wrong. So... Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, boy. All right, so here I go. So I tried to think of some kind of, I guess, four pillars, like Steve Spagnuolo did for the Rams.
That worked out well.
A lot of wins, as I remember. That's how I remember it. Of just some core fundamentals that have kind of maybe driven my politics to the where they are right now. I think one thing was just being a Catholic growing up, Christian. Lots of church. I was a server boy. Played CYC baseball and dropped every grounder hit to me like a good Catholic boy. And actually kind of drifted away from the faith kind of late in undergrad, like most undergrads. And then sort of found it later on when my wife converted. And, you know, then tried to get back into it. But I think what I remember most about what that message was and how it kind of drove my morals was more of the social justice side of the whole Christian Catholic faith. The Jesus being with the weak and raising
the hating
Lazarus.
Of the gays.
And the hating of the gays. Yeah, that's right. In Hating Gay, verse 2, chapter 3. Right. When I was growing up, and maybe it was the church I went to, I don't remember a whole lot of homilies on abortion. I don't remember a whole lot of gay hating going on in the message.
Right.
I remembered a lot of messages about preaching the word to everyone, and kind of like the something common to many religions is just sort of a connection to a human family. It's more like maybe a Zen Buddhist type thing or something. But Jesus had a little Zen Buddha in him, right?
Sure.
And I think the ethics there was that I guess that we have some responsibility to everybody, that the purpose of the faith wasn't to just do your own thing. It was that is that you had some responsibility beyond yourself. And then later on, I was a musician for a while, and I really liked the idea of just being in an orchestra. And an orchestra is a lot like a team, just an athletic team. Where doing great. And the morals of when I was growing up is always like put the team first. You know, we always hated the showboaters and the Deion Sanders. We always liked the good team guys. Although
Scott Rowland guys.
Yeah, you know. the guys whose names I can't remember to say right now, but I can remember Deion Sanders' name because he wrote the little money sign in the dugout in the batter's box. Remember that? Awesome. But yeah, and an orchestra is really like that, where you're all sort of in it as a team. If somebody's really great, well, that's great for them. But if everybody else is not pulling their weight, then the whole thing doesn't work. And so that was a real thinking. And then after that, I was a teacher for a while. Probably came up already. And I was teaching these learning disabled kids how to read. They were all in middle school, and they were probably reading like second, third grade level, and they were like in sixth and seventh grade. So the whole point of the school was to kind of get them up to snuff. So that was the whole point of the school. And there were some teachers in there that took a real authoritarian view of that where they knew they were teaching the right way. And if it wasn't sinking in, there must be some problem with these kids. And I took the other approach where sometimes my lessons went well. And when the lessons didn't go well, or even when there was a discipline problem, I always turned the arrow back on myself. Like, what did I do wrong there? How did I plan this lesson? Was this kid not ready for this? What signs did I miss when the kid came in that I could tell 15 minutes later the kid was going to freak out in class? You know, like, what could I keep doing better to make this happen? That was kind of the approach I took. Here's some other tenets. I guess I feel like I'm not, oddly, this is probably my own maybe psychological problem, but like I don't feel
one of them
is, I don't know if this is common, but I feel like I'm just like one or two, like I'm a stable middle class dude right now, but I feel like I'm just one or two turns away from being the lowest of the low. Like I feel like it's all held up by like bubble gum and scotch tape, and that I don't feel like I personally have some high morals inside of me that have brought me to where I am. I feel like it's just almost like by circumstance of luck and family and being put on the right path, I've ended up in this place. And it's just like holding on by a shoestring, really. So I feel like when we're discussing the plight of all Americans from millionaires to the lowest of the low, I feel like I could be anywhere in there, most likely falling down like a game of Kerplunk when the little, remember Kerplunk where you pull the little pickup sticks out of the little tube and the marble falls down? That's just the way I feel. And I think another thing that comes up is I don't feel particularly proud of where I'm at. I don't feel like I've raised myself up by the bootstraps and arrived to my current spot. I feel like all I've done is I've followed the path that my family has laid out for me. Mm. They laid out a path to do this thing. I had three older brothers that did the same thing. So what did I do? I did exactly what was laid out for me. So there's a few things that I'm proud of where I kind of extended past that. But I don't feel like it was just my hardcore work ethic and my ability to sacrifice that brought me here. I feel like I'm just doing what I was shown to do. So I don't feel all that, you know, like I even have worked that hard to get to where I'm at. So I guess if you bring all those things together, I think it comes down to one theme out of all of those is I prefer this sort of bottom-up approach. I like the idea of the Catholic Church being what the church is really the people. And you need somebody to organize those people. Okay, so you need a priest. And okay, maybe they need to get organized. So you need a bishop. Maybe you need an archbishop. And now you need cardinals. Now you need a pope. I see it as a bottom-up triangle.
Why do you need that?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe we'll come up with that. But, I mean, I think that's why, that's at least the way I see it as kind of a functional thing. What I don't see it as the flock of Catholic people just waiting for the pope to tell the cardinals, to tell the archbishop, to tell the priest, to tell me what to do. Like, I feel like the church is the people together. The orchestra isn't really about the conductor, because the conductor can come in and conduct St. Louis Symphony, but if the symphony sucks, it doesn't matter what the conductor's going to do. The symphony's going to suck. It's about the members, and it's about the second flutist and the last bassist that all come together to make that orchestra better than it would have been. So I have this like kind of bottom-up approach. So, I don't know, maybe that's a populist message. I don't know how it plays into politics, but I guess it's an empathy for those of a lower station, I suppose, or just the common man. I suppose that's a progressive message or a populist message.
Or a judgmental message.
That's allow me to continue. I'm not accepting rebuttals at this time.
All right. I'll keep making notes over here.
Right. So I think when it comes to politics, so I feel like we have all kinds of responsibilities. We have charity responsibilities, family responsibilities, all these sorts of things. And I think we also have civic citizen responsibilities. We're a part of a country, greatest country on earth, we can say. And I feel like as part of a country, we also have responsibilities to each other as citizens that extend beyond me simply not harming you. So I feel like that's almost a patriotic message in a way where we don't usually see patriotic messages. Usually when we see patriotism, we see a big old flag, and we see a big eagle, and we see some, let's go kick some butt overseas, and you don't like this country, well, you get out of here. Right. You know, that kind of thing. I feel like there's patriotism in the idea that we're all in this together. Somehow, by some accident of birth, we've all ended up in this collective that we can call the United States, and I think that bestows upon us great blessings and also responsibilities to each other. Let me just go through a few other things. It's like, I think we've talked about this before, but one thing that drives my economic thinking is simply that I think there should be a divorcing of the idea of wealth and value. Value meaning capital V value, values of things that actually value things. So not value of money. And I think too often we equate those two. Look at that person, he's rich, he must work hard, he must strive for things, he must be a job creator, he must have high value with a capital V. And I could see those things as being completely separated from one another. Maybe they are, maybe they're not, maybe they're just a rich guy, a trust fund baby smoking pot in Colorado, and they got all this money. It doesn't mean they're creating jobs. It doesn't mean they worked hard for it. You could have ditch digger guy or gas repairman who has higher moral value than you know. And I think too often in our sense of driving towards a free market kind of society, we equate market value with real value, and I see those things as being completely separated from one another. One more thing on the economy is essentially what I feel like is the most efficient, powerful economy that we can create I have an analogy of like a nuclear reactor. And so if you have a nuclear reactor with no control rods in it, it just burns and burns and it goes crazy and it just melts itself down into nothingness. A very natural state for a nuclear reactor, but it's not what you're trying to get out of it. And I equate that reactor without control rods to be a purely free market, Ayn Rand kind of just let the market run and let's see what happens kind of situation. I also don't believe in any kind of communism where it should be kind of state-run thing. What I think the government provides is those control rods to shove into the reactor to provide just the right balance or attempt to provide the right balance between the reactor of innovation, reactor of business and commerce and sales with regulation, because somewhere in the middle is the right answer, and that's what brings a strong economy. To me, that sounds completely reasonable, but I think that's because I'm a liberal guy. But I know just that comment on its own would be taken by some conservatives to be Marxist or whatever.
For you listeners, Rob just had his Bill Clinton thumbs going on where he you know,
that's right.
Points them and kind of.
I tell you what, I even bit my bottom lip for a second. All right, that's enough of me going on. It wasn't very coherent. It was more kind of scatterbrained, but it's some little.
I think we're starting to get to the point where you say we should give everybody the same thing, but
I totally don't think that, though. Anyway, let's not do rebuttals. Let's do an airing of grievances, but an airing of inner thoughts.
We are.
And then we'll all attack each other at the end in the second half.
Sounds good. I guess Go for it, Jeremy. Because Jerry's going to round this out by telling us how both of these philosophies are not correct.
Meanwhile, I'm eating my Idaho nachos.
I don't quite have the manifesto that Ted Kaczynski, Rob over there, sorry.
Yeah.
That he has, but I grew up, I think, in a very similar way or a similar household as to what Rob described. My parents were Democrats, therefore I was, and thought that was the way, and the first time, first time I ever voted in a presidential election, it was Bill Clinton's second term, and I voted for him. I liked the guy. Seemed good to me. I was very happy with that. I had older brothers who, I don't remember them getting into arguments with my parents about politics, but they were Republicans. They supported Reagan. I remember hearing that. Strangely, recently, within the last 3 years, one of them has flipped, and he's loving the BO.
Nice! Yeah. Nice!
It's a family tragedy, I must say.
He's seen the error of his way.
You know, I would see that, and I always thought that was kind of odd. I thought, you know, my mom and dad have to be right. Democrat, that's the right way to go. And, you know, you get older and find out your parents were completely wrong, but whatever. It's all part of growing up, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, and funny, my family, everyone in my family's Republican or hardcore Republican. I'm the only one.
Well, I think that was, none of us were hardcore about either side. It was, we were a relatively poor family. We were Catholic. Some of us still are. I don't go. I haven't been in several years, although, unlike Rob, I got closer to the church late in my undergrad. My mom had passed away, and I think that had something to do with it. But my dad passed away in high school. So along those lines, I feel like I have pulled myself up by the bootstraps, to use a cliche, a little bit. Those were two major influences in a young person's life gone.
Right.
And I didn't quit high school. I still went to college. I worked a job while I was in high school and college. And part of that, I had good influences. I had an older brother and a brother-in-law who kind of helped me get, we'll say they helped me get into college, but they made sure I had the forms turned in, that kind of thing.
Right.
Foot on the gas pedal.
Shoved me in the right direction. Right. But I also saw that was something I needed to do, and I had another brother. I have five brothers, by the way, so plenty of people leaning on me. But I had one of them. He
it's like
saw
the Marx Brothers.
There's Zeppo, and but I had one who was telling me, "Tell them to piss off and mind their own business." And I said, "Well, no, they're right. I need to do this stuff. I need to prepare, and I need." So I do give myself a little bit of credit for that.
So you had some choices in there.
I had
choices, and I could have gone.
I wasn't a partier in high school.
Right.
I had a job, so Friday nights I was usually working. Saturday, whatever. I went out a little bit, but never anything extreme.
And that's big. You made a choice. You actively made a choice to drive yourself a direction versus just like no exit ramps on the road and you're just driving down it.
Right.
Right.
And I did some things to get out of my comfort zone. I was a pretty quiet, shy guy. Well, I was a marching band geek, as was Rob, right?
Yeah.
Well, I ended up being drum major. That was way outside of anything I would have ever done. And it was great for me. I think it opened a lot of doors. That maybe some people are laughing about that,
no.
But it wasn't necessarily the fact that, oh, he's a drum major, but it changed me to a point that I was able to open doors or I would go after things that I would not have otherwise. Let's see.
Your story's better than mine. I feel like such a wuss.
But like Rob, I do look at situations and I internalize if something, when he was talking about a student who didn't pick up on a lesson, well, what could I have done differently?
Right.
I I know I do that a lot. I've had people tell me I do that a lot. And I think there should be more of that. I think that's a problem. There's not enough internalization of how can I fix this? Not
absolutely.
What have you done to me? What are you going to do for me?
Right.
Way too much of that going on.
Right.
How that leads to politics, there's a lot of what are you going to give me coming from the side that Rob supports. Now, he will say that coming from, before I say the side I support, I don't identify with really any political party, especially the big two, Republican or Democrat. I think they're both sending us down the tubes. This back and forth finger pointing gets us nowhere. And I think they all play the same game, kind of laughing behind the scenes, like, hope we fool them again. We're all gathering up the money and they're screwed, stuck with whatever legislation we ramrodded through.
Right.
But along those lines, Rob talks a lot about free market and capitalism and being money, money, money. That's the end all be all. And I don't quite see it that way. I think it has can morph into that and probably has morphed into that. But I think if you want to call me a Republican right now for the purposes of this discussion, I don't think the goal is money. I think the goal is let's try to let people achieve the most they can. Be as successful as they can. Let's not take away from them if they want to try to do something. Now, I don't think the Republicans go about it in a very good way, because I think there is a lot of holding people back because you aren't in the club. But that's how I see capitalism and the Republican approach, if it were pure, which it's not.
Right.
Now, Rob also talked about he was born in this place and went down this path, and it was an accident of birth. Well, I was number 12 of 12 kids, so I am the accident of birth. The last seven of us were accidents of birth. But that's
not quite what
we're talking about here.
Thank you, sir.
If you go back really not that far in the history of America, to say that, well, my success is an accident of birth, that's a slap in the face to a lot of people who sacrificed a lot to come here because of the opportunity. They left, and they still do it. I've dated a girl who was born in Kiev.
Yeah.
Her family purposely came over here because they didn't like the opportunity that the father saw, that there was no opportunity there.
Right.
He brought them over here. That's not an accident of birth. That's somebody saying, this is the place to be because I can be the most I can be.
Right.
So, I'm not sure. Maybe we have reached a point where, well, we're here, so I'm just going to stay here. But maybe that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's not an accident of birth. Maybe you're still seeing that, well, I still have a lot of opportunity here, or I'm doing well enough that I can stay here.
Right.
I mean, you have children, if I may bring that up. I'll give you their social security numbers here in a second.
No, this would be easy to... Yeah, I completely agree. And you got to... When I say kind of accident of birth, sometimes you can think of it as like a karmic lottery where everybody gets born and you're thrown into a little hopper and you pull your card and you get America, woohoo! You could have most likely you're going to get something much crappier, right? So you kind of won the birth lottery is what I say there. But when I talk about the path and about the path I was set on, I denigrate myself in saying that I'm not proud of what I created out of that, but I give total props that was specifically created for me by my parents. That was their chief goal,
was to lay that path for me, for me to follow. And that's what I want to provide for my kids, you know.
Okay.
So it's more that I don't feel like I have like strove and you know, have kind of created this out of nothing. I've followed the path that was laid for me, and that's a big salute to my parents who basically laid the little bricks in front of me, and I saw them and then I stepped on them. You know, that was right.
But theoretically, then you can either lay more bricks for yourself, or keep the bricks going for your children.
Exactly,
I mean, and that's
exactly right. And that's the point. That's the point of it all. Right.
I don't know. I feel like the bricks are being taken away by the government. I feel like they're not allowing people to build the path the way they used to. I think I'm getting away from... I was talking a lot about what Rob was saying, trying to show how my views differ, and therefore that's why we have differing political views, but I didn't mean to...
That's
say
fine.
His story is wrong or anything.
But, that's fine.
But my last little bit about why I have the beliefs I do, I think America had the foundation of freedom, but with a sound mind or with an educated mind. And now we've taken that last part off and just had freedom. We just have freedom. So you're free to do whatever you want. Well, no. Like Chris Rock said, you can drive with your feet if you want to.
doesn't make it a good idea.
Over the Christmas break, I was at one of my favorite Welsh pubs. Shall remain nameless.
You can give him a plug.
It was kind of... was at Llewellyn's, all right? I was at Llewellyn's.
Of course it was.
It was kind of empty in there. I was sitting at the bar. There were plenty of open seats. Well, my food... arrives, their steak and cheese. Oh, it's magnificent. You know, it's one of my favorite things.
It's time to get it all.
Well, about not even 5 minutes after my food arrives and I start eating, a lady sits down two seats over, fires up a cigarette. And that was very annoying to me. Like, I'm trying to eat here, and I understand that I'm in a bar, but it's not a smoky bar. And I wouldn't have noticed it had she moved. There were five other seats.
Right.
She could have chosen any of them.
Right.
She left her table of friends to purposely come over and smoke. I guess she didn't want to bother them with the smoking.
I think she was getting ready to hit on you.
I don't think that was it at all.
She wanted the other half of your cheesesteak sandwich.
So the point of all this is that... So later on, I posted something on Facebook like, hey, thanks, smoker lady, for choosing the seat right next to me. And I wasn't advocating a law against smoking. All I said was, maybe you could have chosen a different seat.
Right.
Right.
Well, this acquaintance on Facebook, oh, he lit up. Well, maybe you shouldn't have gone there, and you're infringing on her right to smoke. But it was interesting to me that more people supported what I had written, and some of them were current smokers, some were former smokers, saying, yeah, I would never have done what that lady did because that is completely rude. And that's where we are. We have freedom, but we don't have the good, sound decision-making anymore.
Right.
Whew. That was a lot. Yeah. Now on to the real...
that was a good one.
The real answer.
Yeah. Golf good. To Jeremy for the manifesto.
So I guess it's my turn. So I was born a poor black child.
With Steve Martin?
Yeah. My upbringing wasn't terribly different, I'm sure. I was brought up Catholic light, or Lutheran, as we called it. Middle class, decidedly. But not affluent enough that the path was obvious. I was an only child, so, you know, it wasn't like I was sharing resources with siblings or anything, but...
it's because once you have one Jerry, I mean, that's all you need.
That's all you need.
Total package.
But you, you know, you're certainly exposed to what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to graduate high school, and then you go to college, and then you get a job, and then you settle down, and, you know, that's the, and the house, and the white picket fence, and the two kids, right, and the dog, and, you know, that's the path, right? We all know that. That's the, quote, American dream, and you know, I didn't follow that path exactly, and...
Yet you have chickens now.
That's right.
That's
and
true.
And probably a fence.
I do have a fence. It's not a white picket fence, but I have a fence. So, you know, my parents couldn't afford to send me to college. I had to figure out how to pay for that on my own. So I went in the Marines because that was the only option I had available to me. I knew I wanted to go to college. So, you know, I spent 6 years in the Marines, got the GI Bill, and that paid for, I don't know, 80% of my college. And so I was a non-traditional college student, 24-year-old freshman, which is a, you know, a unique and rewarding experience that I would recommend everyone do. but I was, you know, going back to... Going back to my parents, you know, my dad was a Democrat when I was a little kid. At some point, he converted to being a Republican. I'm not really sure when that happened because we never really talked politics when I was growing up. But, you know, he was a Republican, so therefore I was a Republican. And, you know, it didn't hurt that I was in the military, and virtually everyone in the military is Republican. So that was kind of the place I started from, and, you know, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh every day on the radio, and, yeah, I'm not proud of that, but...
You shouldn't be.
It happened. So it wasn't until I got to college, and I had a roommate that was the exact opposite of me in every way that you could possibly measure, you know, two human beings. And it was good for me because, like, it had never occurred to me that, you know, everybody in the world's not a Christian. Some people, right, don't believe in God.
Right.
Some people are, you know, liberal as the day is long, and they have very different viewpoints about things. So that was an eye-opening experience for me, as I'm sure it is for most people when they go away to college and get exposed to a lot of, right, things they haven't been exposed to. But, I mean, we spent long nights doing exactly what we're doing here, debating politics, talking about all these issues, and, you know, I found myself having to defend my faith and having to defend my conservative viewpoints, and, you know, I'd never had to do that before. Right. And that's something else I encourage everybody to do, is to, you know, find somebody who challenges you, somebody that, you know, you have to defend your position to, because it makes you better at it. Well, it makes you a better human being, to put it bluntly. You know, when you're forced to think about why you believe certain things and come up with some rational basis for those beliefs, rather than just, you know, spewing whatever your parents believed, whatever Fox News tells you you should believe, you know.
When "well, because" is no longer a valid reason.
Yeah, exactly. So I, you know, kudos to college, because you get educated on many levels beyond just the academic, you know. So after college, I became disillusioned with the government, the way it was currently structured, and this was, you know, mid-90s.
What triggered that, as we write your biography, this would be a big chapter?
I don't know if there was one particular event. I was not a fan of Bill Clinton's, and it was, you know, it was after he left office and Bush took over, and I realized, you know what? I'm not really a fan of his either.
Right. That makes sense, because you were like, I can't wait until we get our guy in there.
Right.
And you got your guy in there, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, and you know, 9/11 comes along, and the reaction to that was just, you know, a complete knee-jerk reaction that has sent our country on a trajectory that is, you know, just abysmal. And so that, you know, I was already headed in the anarchist direction. I mean, I was no longer claiming to be a Republican at that point, and, you know, was a libertarian. And then, I don't know.
Anarchist light?
Well, yeah, and...
Gateway drug?
And there are those that will tell you that, you know, that's the natural progression of a thinking man, right? That you start out liberal, become more conservative as you get older, and then, you know, if you continue to think about things, you eventually wind up where I am.
I prefer not to continue to think about things.
You
prefer
what?
That's been apparent on every episode.
So we have talked about my philosophy on past episodes, and I'll put links to those in the show notes. My three principles, we covered those. I think it was like episode 26 or 27.
That was a good one.
It was a while ago. So I'll put links in the show notes for the listeners who want to check that out. But just to state them, all men are created equal. That's my first principle. The initiation of force is immoral. That's my second principle. And the third is a libertarian principle. You have the right to do whatever you want, unless or until it infringes on the rights of another to do the same. And so that's kind of what guides my philosophy at this point. So, that's where we are.
Where do we go from here?
Break.
Yeah. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we will, spend a few minutes critiquing each other's positions.
All right.
And then, we'll go somewhere else from there. So stay with us. Hello.
Speak of the devil.
All right, we are back. Had an interesting conversation there during the break. I guess I should have been recording that too, but I don't know. Some of that wasn't fit for fit for broadcast. So we're going to spend a few minutes here critiquing each other's life stories.
Yeah, Jeremy, I got a bone to pick.
Yeah, Rob.
I'm getting fired up here. Not really. But, like, I think the first thing I thought of, and I think what one thing, maybe we've hit on the thing that really differentiates the parties, is when we think of things like unemployment insurance has been big in the news, or disability, or Social Security, whatever it is, welfare, food stamps, the things that really fire up kind of the two sides of the party, I think it really comes down to, like, who do you see as the benefit of those things? Like, one thing I completely disagree with, like, I was watching Jon Stewart, who's usually right on point on so many things.
On point, you mean he agrees with you?
No, he's got a...
Well, then what do you mean by on point?
I mean on point in that I think his politics are liberal, but I think his ability to to have an incisive wit of satire upon maybe the media or the hypocrisy that's going on. I think he's very good at that. He's got a very sharp wit on that.
I would agree.
Now, at the same time, he was talking to somebody about these sorts of things, about unemployment insurance. And he said, I kid you not, he said, you know, these people on unemployment insurance, they're just not hanging out on unemployment insurance. They're working every day to go get a job, and they need this help. Like, it's a very rosy picture of what you see unemployment insurance as. Like, I think there was a Republican senator or congressman that came out that said, hey, let's just put in this next bill that you can get your disability or you can get your unemployment insurance, but there's no way you can get them both. You can't be disabled and be seeking work. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And I don't know what happened with that because I'm not paying attention to the news these days. But I would imagine that was contentious. And that's crappy. That's just a reasonable move. But what John Stewart said and the John Stewart maybe extreme left mindset is that whole crowd is just, you know, they're out fighting every day with resumes and they're trying to feed their family. And that's not true because you got a whole bunch of cheats. But it's also maybe not true that the whole idea is a useless thing. And I bring it back to when you mention your people from Kiev or whatever, like the land of opportunity,
yeah.
And about my control rod. Well, in Kiev, I'll make grand statements here. In that environment, I would say you may have had a free market economy. You may have had the ability to sell what people want, unencumbered by government regulation. Because maybe
in the Ukraine,
I don't know.
No, that's part of the Soviet Union.
I guess I don't know how intrusive the government is there.
In the market, what would have been the Soviet Union?
In the market, I don't know. I know they're not going to let you diss.
I think
on
that may have been before Perestroika. So.
Let me allow your example to suit my needs.
All right.
Which is what I'm aiming for.
You wouldn't bend the truth around as you normally do.
But I think, or we'll take Jerry Somalia, for example, his anarchist wonderland. Well,
Libertarian paradise.
Libertarian paradise.
And now you have cholera.
That's right. And so, you said land of opportunity. I would say there's all kinds of opportunity in Somalia. You want to be a pirate? You can be a pirate. Arr! There's a lot of opportunity, but that's not the opportunity they're seeking. They're not seeking a free Wild West opportunity. They're seeking a controlled opportunity.
Who is they?
The people who are seeking America and the American dream. Cue Neil Diamond singing his song.
Wait a minute. You just said they're not seeking a Wild West, but that's what America was. And that's where a lot of opportunity was. And I'm not saying that was great because there's a lot of bad stuff that happened
right.
in the Wild West. But
right.
people still went because of the opportunity.
I think the modern era of opportunity provides a system where the market can work with controls, with protections, with a certain safety net for your risk. I think a lot of people take a lot of risks now because there's a certain net there. That if you start your business and your whole savings is lost, that you're not going to be, maybe you're going to have some net there, and I think that's what
well,
that
there, yeah.
I, what I'm
think
saying
that
is
net
that
net is saving maybe the wrong people in a lot of cases.
Maybe it is. What I'm trying to propose is that the idea that the right amount of government inside of the market helps the market be the most fruitful. It helps the nuclear reactor produce energy and not just melt itself down and not just come to a nothing. And to me, that idea is completely reasonable. But I think just the idea of any kind of interaction there is anathema to a whole spectrum of.
Okay, and I don't.
Yeah, I just added a link to the reading room. I'll put it in the show notes about whether or not you can prevent the next economic meltdown, you know, and some economists don't believe you can because you have to have the boom with the bust. It's just a natural cycle. And the reason being is, you know, the instability leads to the bust. And then once you build up the stability again, you know, then you have the boom and that lasts for some period of time, let's say 50 years. And the thing about the stability is it leads people to tolerate risky behavior because they think, hey, everything's stable. You know, nothing bad's going to happen to me. It's going to happen to the bad guy over there who's engaged in the risky behavior. So I tend to agree with what you just said about that being just kind of the natural order of things.
Yeah.
But let's get back to critiquing what, some of the points we made.
I was critiquing. That was my critique.
What I was saying about...
All right, sorry, I didn't make that connection.
It's more of a similar to what Jerry was just saying, but if there's no risk of failure or there's no consequence for failure, then I'm going to take every possible risk.
Right.
What's the difference?
Well, I don't
Somebody think... else will bail me out. It's not...
I think there's always risk. I mean, I guess it's a matter of how bad do you want it to be.
Look, I was enrolled in a flight school that went bankrupt, and largely due to the fuel when fuel prices went through the roof in 2009. Right about the same time, a lot of big banks were getting bailed out, and a lot of rich guys were getting bailed out.
Right.
This school didn't get bailed out, and the money I had on account, which was more than a little chump change, was all lost. And there was they declared bankruptcy, and that was closed. There were no assets. Right. Most of the planes were rented planes owned by someone else. I saw nothing.
Right.
And it wasn't like I gambled on something.
Right.
I was just paying to go to a school.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Which should have been pretty stable.
Right.
By most measurements.
Right. But because of something else, somebody else's gamble, that sunk that school and it sunk me.
So you lost in that, right?
I lost.
Who won?
Who won? I guess the oil companies, because the price of fuel was sky high.
We'll dip our little toe into the Jerry conspiracy theory lake here, see how the water is. But you mentioned the boom and bust is a natural cycle. Oh, we're growing like plants in the seasons. You know, there's a thought out there that every time that this is the first big bust. That it has not affected everyone equally. So in the previous busts, I can find research on this if I care to do it, which I'll never do. But that like when in the roaring 20s, everybody all the rising tide floated all boats, and then when the depression hit, everybody went down. And then you had the 50s and the 70s. This was the first recession where the rich got richer out of it and the poor got poorer.
They finally figured out how to pull the levers correctly.
Exactly. Well, how do you...
I'm not sure I agree with that premise, but go ahead.
It's outrageous, like all conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
But well, I know that there were a lot of people that came out of the Great Depression smelling like a rose.
Well, I think if you look at income inequality is a big buzzword now. And there's been things. I mean, it's been something brewing ever since the recession has happened, I think. And now it's just becoming a political issue. But it's been a topic of conversation for quite a while. And I think if you track income inequality through those ups and downs, with this particular one, everything spreads out. And I think that's something to worry about. And what can handle it? Is the free market going to handle that for us? I think all we got to look at is regulation and government and try to stop these booms from happening. Because people in power that serve to make money off the next bubble and bust, they're going to try to make the next bubble and bust. And it's going to zoink your flight school.
Well, we're not talking about bubbles here. At least I wasn't. I'm talking about
look at this
economic expansion.
Right,
of,
sure. But look at the stock market now. Does anybody look at the stock market unless you're a Barack Obama guy and you go
way overvalued right now?
Right, right. But you look at it if you were a George Bush supporter, or how about this, if you were a Mitt Romney supporter and Mitt Romney was president, wouldn't you look at that and go, yeah, look at that stock market. That's pretty good. It's because Mitt Romney restores faith in the markets. There'd be all this theory about it. But now I think maybe because we've had the same president and the same sort of Congress and everything, we don't quite have that narrative. So I think it's more obvious that the stock market is overvalued. Well, why do you overvalue overvalue a market. Well, an overvalued market busts. And guess what happens every time it busts, maybe now in the new world order? Every time it busts, rich get richer, poor get poorer, we do better. I think it's something to think about.
I don't know what to do about it.
I don't know what to do
about it.
It's
an interesting conspiracy theory.
I mean, I've read, I guess, two different articles so far this year about how... I get a small one. When the market corrects, it's going to be like a 60% correction.
Meaning what?
Meaning it's going to go from 16,000 down to, what's 60% of that? 9,000?
And will that market decline have the same effect as the recession? Or are they just saying the market has detached itself from the economy at this point?
No, I don't.
Because like in the Great Recession, I mean, the economy was booming and house value, I mean, everything was up, including the market, and then everything went down. Now it's like the market's gone up, but I don't think anybody thinks, oh my God, look at the economy, we're all set, you know?
I don't think they're talking about it in the sense of, well, the market will come back down to where it should be, but everything else will stay at a nice value, and we'll be fine. No, I think it's more, look out, this is coming.
That we already got another bubble brewing in the stock market.
The bubble is now, is what they're saying.
Right, that's what I'm saying. And why create bubbles? Why create bubbles? So they can pop and you can gain off the pop. And every time it pops, you lose your money in flight school. And we lose our house prices and we lose our retirement and whatever else.
But if I've been gathering my forces right now during this bubble, when it is a bust, I might have some resources where I can take advantage of that too.
Gonna play the game,
right?
Let a player play.
I mean, if you bought and housing prices were low, say I was able to buy two properties because of housing values being so low. Well, things start going up. All of a sudden, it's looking pretty good. Maybe I get some cash flow from it. Yeah. Now, next time, I can buy three properties.
Okay, so. I have at least one point I wanted to make based on what I heard you guys talking about in the first half. So one of the things that struck me about Rob's monologue was, you know, you used the word collective in there once.
I like that word.
Yeah, I know. And you know... Some of what you said, I completely agree with as far as, you know, a person's obligation to their fellow man and, you know, that we're all in this together, we need to take care of each other, you know, I agree with all of that. The problem always comes in when you try to legislate that or you try to coerce people into being charitable to their fellow man. That's when it stops being charity. And it's no longer a noble pursuit at that point. It's just, you know, it's just an indiscriminate use of force.
Robbery.
Yeah. And so I think some on the left, not yourself necessarily, but some on the left would say, well, so what? You know, the ends justify the means. As long as the poor are being helped, as long as the hungry are being fed, who cares what the means are, and you know, that's where I disagree with it. That's where I diverge from the sense of obligation that I feel to my fellow man, to those who are less fortunate than me. I totally agree with that, up to the point where you're going to force me to give resources to those less fortunate people.
You have
people.
To diverge because whatever the rules are, the laws, whatever is in there, we can perhaps assume we're passed constitutionally by the legislature in a democracy.
I don't think we can assume that anymore.
Well, right. You could always quibble. That's why I caveated that. I mean, you could say this is all not constitutional and the government's gone rogue. Whatever. Put that in a little box. Put it in a little box. Put it over to the side.
Too many little boxes.
You know, so your government, whether it's gone rogue or not, has followed its little self-governing rules to create this system that you find tyrannical. So the only logical conclusion is that a representative democracy that we have is itself a tyrannical system, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so to finish my thought, I feel like I have better insight now into why you view the collective as being a positive thing. You know, the analogies you used as far as being a part of an orchestra, you know, being a part of a larger group or a larger whole. You know, I see that.
Others are part of a very large whole.
That's W-H-O-L-E.
Oh, sorry.
He may encompass himself.
So, I mean, you know, some of that, it sheds light on you know, your past positions on things, I guess is what I'm saying.
I made myself clear. Well,
however...
Now
I'm going to say the part that I hope doesn't offend you.
Oh, lay it on me.
Will likely offend other liberals who are listening, but...
Hit me up.
I've always believed that... Well, maybe not always, but certainly in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, since I've really been, you know, a hardcore anarchist, I do believe that the people who would... shun this approach to crafting a society are people who lack self-confidence. That it boils down to the level of self-confidence an individual has. I think liberals generally, and I'm totally stereotyping here, but I think liberals generally lack self-confidence. And here's why.
Most awesome podcast ever.
Here's why.
Getting some gems here, baby.
Because they look at all the people around them who are doing things, all right? And we talked about this a little bit during the break, how, you know, you at some point in your life, you realize you just got to make something happen, right? You got to stand up. You got to pull yourself up by the proverbial bootstraps and do what you got to do. That takes self-confidence. And the people who lack that look at the people who have it and say, oh, well, they're engaged in risky behavior that could cause harm to either me or society at large. So we should step in and regulate that in some way.
Rob
is shaking his head.
Don't pull a hamstring on that leap you just made there.
Well, so, I mean, it's... You know, the people, libertarians and anarchists and the people that are, you know, want to separate themselves from government and, you know, we feel like we're self-sufficient, we can do it without government. All of that kind of engenders this feeling of, it's like, you know, rugged individualism, right? The how the West was won, that whole kind of, that American DNA, right? And I always feel like the liberals look at that and say, oh, well, you're going to go off and either hurt yourself or hurt somebody else if
yes.
you're doing that.
Yes.
So we can't allow that to remain unchecked.
Right.
We've got to put some controls in place to keep that freewheeling spirit in check.
Yeah, I don't think it's that at all. I think the problem is that our country and our human family is a disaster. It's a whole spectrum of people in the human family. And take our country citizens as a little slice of the human family. And I completely agree. If everybody was at 100 IQ or above, with average, with good intelligence, with quality parents and a good upbringing and self-agency. I totally agree. If you sectioned off those people and put them in a little group and hopefully made sure that they didn't reproduce and create somebody who didn't meet the conditions of said master race, you know, they would only create people of said criteria, you would have a great little system. You know, everybody would be empathetic and it would all just work out. That's not what the human family is. It's not what our country is. And if you all, you conservatives, to say you love your country, when you say you love your country, it's like loving your wife. You got to love all the warts, you know, as well as all the good parts. And you got to love all of the crappy people that are in our nation.
No, you don't. No.
Because when you're trying to solve these political problems, and what you do with Social Security, Medicare, disability, whatever it is, you're not trying to solve what can I do for this really smart person with a college degree or this person from a fantastic family. You're not trying to solve that problem. That problem's already been solved. You're trying to solve how do we bring the most possible people up into that echelon is what you're trying to solve with the liberal agenda. I don't think you're trying to stop you from doing whatever it is you want to do. I mean, you might feel like that from time to time, I mean, especially if they're taking your money.
Yeah, that's the first step.
First step is take your money.
I don't think you keep saying, well, you have to love everybody. You have to... No, when somebody demonstrates that they're not working toward the collective, to use your words...
Right.
They're out.
And I'm all with right? that. I'm with
you're,
that. As,
the orchestra only works when everybody's trying to play right, the same song at
right.
the same time.
And if you suck, you just suck. Right? And you can't... You're out. You can't be with us anymore.
Right. But what about the guy that plays a really kick-ass solo?
He could stay.
But where is the room for him?
First flute.
Okay, but... Then you've just set him up for failure, right? Because he's either going to, you know, piss everybody else off because he's so much better than they are, and you know you're going
to
have.
I don't feel a drive of empathy to those that are kicking ass.
Well, I'm not saying empathy. I'm saying
leave him alone.
Yeah. Exactly.
You want to have one night a week where it's your concert only? Hey, all right. Borrow the hall. I mean,
so other than taking your money, what else is there?
Oh, well, I mean, just start at the top of the Federal Register and work your way down. You know? I mean, we are way over-legislated. What are all those laws for? What are they there for? They're there for eventualities that may never occur.
You feel this big thumb
to try to
pushing down on you.
Well, that big thumb is there trying to even out the scales, right? You're trying to level the playing field so everybody has. But you know that's not fair to the people who are capable of excelling. Who are capable of being extraordinary. You're saying everybody needs to start out equal. And
how do you reconcile that overall opinion with what we were just talking about the stretching income inequality gap? I mean, are people who are excelling, making all sorts of money, are they like, man, I made $8 million this year, but if this government wasn't all up on my back, I would have made $10 million. Like, is that our chief concern as a country? Is that what we're worried about?
That should not be a concern of anyone other than the person earning the $8 million a year. You should not care how much that person is earning. It's none of your damn business.
I don't care, but...
Well, you kind of do.
I kind of do because I'm taking that extra $2 mil, right?
Yeah, and you're using it for good in your mind.
Well,
but, you know, the guy you took it from probably would have used it for good, too, in his mind. And since it was his money, I would say he gets to spend it.
And that's where your control rods on the reactor are broken.
Yeah.
We aren't controlling how that money is spent well enough. And we don't need more legislation. We need less taking of money, so they don't even have the money to screw things up.
You want, you're,
these
you're
programs
a,
are broken.
You want to starve it. The old starve it theory. That regardless of all these ethical questions and citizenship and what patriotism is and what a government should do, government is screwing stuff up in overall as a its overall grade is sucky. So yeah. Let's just starve it out and starve it from
you're starving.
I am all for I am all for you know, you mentioned patriotism and you mentioned, you know, all the motherhood stuff. I am all for teaching kids that that is their place. That is, you know, what they should be doing as decent human beings. You know, don't harm your fellow man. Do what you can to help those who are less fortunate than you. You know, bring your kids up that way. I'm totally on board with that. It's the next step that I object to. It's when you take it to the next step, which is, hey, you know what? You make a lot of money, so it's not going to hurt you if I take some of that money and I give it to this group over here who doesn't have a lot of money.
I would say that's consistent because you don't have any, you don't believe in that there's any concept of a nation or a,
right.
or a government over that. But a traditional conservative approach, which may or may not be represented here on the podcast, would be all about the put a flag on my car and beat my chest about the eagle and the flag and
right.
you know and say this is my nation. And so if you have a nation, then what is that nation's obligation to its people? Is there any?
The or is people it just a collective? Are the nation.
Right. But there's Catholic Church is the Catholic people.
There's a link in the show notes to this quiz that was in Time magazine this past week. And the title was something like "Can Time Guess Your Politics?" And it was, you know, it was completely contrived. It was like 10 questions, and I mean the way they built it up was, we're going to ask you some, you know, some crazy questions like boxers or briefs or Coke or Pepsi, and based on your answers to those, you know, we're going to determine whether or not you're a liberal or a conservative. In reality, it was two or three of those kinds of questions, and the rest were all completely political questions. But one of them was exactly that. It's like, should government value the lives of its own citizens much more than the lives of other people? And, you know, that sparked some debate in you know, among the people I was talking to when we took this quiz. And the answer is clearly no. To me, and by the way, I was 85% liberal according to this quiz. But the answer to that is clearly no, because all men are created equal,
right.
And government needs to recognize that right. and value all human beings as equal. But it doesn't.
No.
It does what you're saying.
Right.
It says its own citizens are worth more than its non-citizens.
Yeah, and, America.
Well. That's BS. Jeremy's smirking like he has some contrary opinion.
No, I'm trying to think of... I'm digesting.
Okay.
I took a couple of quizzes online. It was, What town suits you the best?
Uh-huh.
And then which Star Wars character would you be? And it told me I should live in Cape Town. These were separate quizzes.
Yep. Thanks.
Told me I should live in Cape Town.
Which okay.
I thought that was kind of interesting. That's not what yep. I would have guessed, but...
And you're Han Solo.
I was Chewbacca.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That was not what I thought... Or how I thought that one would have turned out, but interesting concept about the nation and how it values life. I feel like we're in a place where our government doesn't value anybody's life,
yeah.
whether it's a U.S. citizen or a foreign citizen. We're all enemies to them now, is how I feel, and that is a weird feeling for me. I'm these last few years, last five or so years, maybe, I don't know when it started, but it's been a slow progression.
Yeah.
But that's how I see it now. It's like there's this government entity, and they're trying to insulate themselves from everything else, foreign and domestic. That worries me a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember what Rob said a minute ago that was completely wrong. I was going to tell him about it.
Maybe it's so right it was wrong.
Jeremy's pondering.
Pondering again. How about some more dead air?
Okay, so since we're talking about the world in general, our listener Eric posed an interesting little puzzle.
Let's get it on.
Yeah, I think it's worth spending a few minutes talking about this. So he asked us if. I'm trying to remember exactly how he worded it now. If you didn't live in the United States, if you could maintain your same socioeconomic status and move to anywhere else on the planet,
your whole family. He said you would take your support system with you.
Right,
so
you and your family and everything. Where would you move to? And maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you would stay here in the United States. But if not, why and where would you go? So
I got my answer. Staying here in America. No.
America.
Like I think I mentioned on one of these podcasts, I spent like 2.5 weeks in the Netherlands. Woohoo, Netherlands.
Ooh, yeah.
And I gotta this is gonna offend all the Dutch listeners we have, of which there are none. But allow me to offend the Dutch in the
they're out keeping the dykes from Lincoln, don't worry about it.
That's right. I got a weird sense.
We're gonna get hate mail.
Women in comfortable shoes.
I got a weird sense in the Netherlands that it was like this. Oh my God, we got a lot of money. Nobody really knows we're here, and I think we can keep this money if nobody really knows we're here. So let's all take it easy. Let's everybody just take it, throttle it back. Let's just ride this thing out. We're not going to try to save the world from Islamic hatred. We're also not going to try to save it from communism. You know, let the U.S. go and do their little thing with their, you know, military weapons. Let's just keep it quiet.
And Goodfellas after they steal all that money. Exactly. Buy a fur coat or a Cadillac.
Exactly. And here, I'll get even more offensive. If that wasn't offensive enough, allow me to continue.
I want to hear more about it, but go ahead. I have a couple of questions.
I have a sense in my weak sense of world history that we've all heard of said Dutch West Indies.
Yeah.
But I think that wealth did not come from innovation of cars and radios. I think that wealth came from some pretty dicey stuff. Some pretty dicey colonialism of foreign lands, of which they collected a lot of banking and a lot of money from. And when it became time, when colonialism was like so played out, they said, and we're done. Hey, guess what? We got all this money. So you're saying
it's old money.
It's old money. It's old money. And they're not using that old money to save the world from evil. They're using that old money to just take it easy, baby.
And we're talking 1600s old.
We're talking old money.
Yeah.
Right. And not only that, I think of this. Get this. I haven't been offensive enough. I'm gonna get Dutch hate mail. I have a feeling that they have been able to use their Dutch language as an insulating feature amongst their country, meaning that it's completely fine for them to say, for you to have this job you must speak Dutch, for you to have this job you must speak Dutch, because it's part of the national language. Well,
okay.
every Dutch person who's ever born in the Netherlands who's Dutch speaks fluent English. You know who doesn't speak Dutch? Everyone else. And so you can't emigrate you can't emigrate and make a good life in the Netherlands unless you study Dutch. You know how many people know Dutch? Nobody. People who are Dutch know
what
Dutch.
What is wrong with that?
There's not anything wrong with it.
But Iceland, they have a registry of names you can use to name your child.
Right. Well, it's government control. Jerry would have an issue with that.
Is that one of the control rods that you were talking about?
Yeah. Well, why is it okay to have a control rod? I'm okay with calling it a control rob.
I guess what I'm saying is that...
You want to control some things, but...
It's only
things you want to control.
No, I think what they figured out is just the right amount of controls to just keep everything going.
And why is that wrong?
I'm saying that's where I want to move to.
Okay. Like, we're talking about
think,
it like it was
Do you think
wrong.
Those Dutch guys are like, man, I only work 40 weeks this year. My New Year's resolution is to work 48. No. Everybody's like, hey, Bob Von Dorsch, because they're all Bob Von something. Hey, Bob, you want to work 48 weeks this year? No. How about you? No. All right, let's just keep this stuff at 40. And everything just works. Everything just works.
But you were talking about it like it was wrong. Like they had committed some kind of crime. You're changing the script now.
I'm saying, you said, where would I move? That's where I would move.
They figured it out.
And you know what?
You just talked about it. Like, they did some shady stuff, and now they're sitting on it.
And it raises this question. Here's why I think it's shady. Is it violates all of our so-called American ideals, which is the myths we tell ourselves, the myths of American mobility or upward mobility, the myths of the melting pot, right? And the myths of American exceptionalism, where we get to just dictate our liberty around the world. They don't tell themselves that stuff. They're not trying to do that stuff. We keep trying to do this stuff. We keep trying to be the melting pot. We keep trying to, I don't know, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe the American idea doesn't work in that sense.
Are you familiar with the tulip bulb crash?
I think you are, because I've never heard of said tulip bulb crash.
Okay, I'll have to put a link in the show notes to that, too. First bubble. First economic bubble. You can ask any economist. They will tell you about the Dutch tulip bulb crash back in the 1600s. It was a time when, tulips were all the rage all over Europe. People were buying them, and that's where you went to bid on them. So they had these huge auctions all the time, and there were guys trying to corner the market on tulip bulbs. And some did. Some were successful, and they made mad bank doing it. And then,
centuries of bank.
Ran the price of tulips up, and then the bottom fell out. And, there were all kinds of people that were ruined as a result.
All kinds of windmills with their doors shut.
Yeah.
People tilting at them.
Why they're on golf courses now.
So, I don't know. It's just interesting that you picked that as your place, because that is one of the very first and worst economic bubbles to burst.
I feel terrible. This is all. I caveat this with all being so offensive, and I don't understand Netherlands history, but when you walk around New York City, I feel a buzz of drive of some sort. What I don't feel is a buzz of innovation, which is kind of interesting. I've never been to Silicon Valley, but I wonder if I would feel like a buzz of creation. A buzz of manufacturing, a buzz of let's go do something. When I'm in New York City, I feel a buzz of drive. Like, let's go do some stuff. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'll make a new dress, but I'm going to do some stuff. Like, when I was in Amsterdam, I felt like, hey, I felt a buzz of, hey, this is pretty sweet,
you
right?
You felt a buzz in Amsterdam.
Right? The feeling was...
Rob.
The feeling was, hey, everybody, this is pretty awesome, isn't it? You, over there, stop trying to work 41 weeks. I'm working 40 weeks. And if we all work 40 weeks, we all got it set. So stop.
Yeah.
And so don't show up at 7-Eleven at 11 p.m. I can get a Slurpee at 1 a.m. because you know why? Because the guy across the street are offering Slurpees. They're like, hey, everybody, stop with the Slurpees at 1 a.m. Nobody wants to do this.
Right, right.
They've collectively, to use a term, come together. And
so is that a voluntary agreement, or is that something that the government enforces?
It's very much enforced.
Yeah.
And everybody says, awesome. I'm into that.
Of course they do. And they pay 58% income tax, probably.
And when I'm there, I'm like, take it. Oh,
you're
I gotta,
like
I plan my 12 weeks of vacation. Where am I going to safari? Oh, hurt me.
You're
hurt
like
me again.
I forget the character's name in The Matrix when he's doing the monologue and he's eating the steak, you know, and he's like, I know this steak isn't real, but you know, I don't care. It tastes juicy, and you know, it's like he wanted to be inserted back into the Matrix.
Yeah. Plug me in, baby.
Ignorance is bliss.
Plug me in.
Well, all right, so Jeremy,
That's my place.
Where would you go?
I have a few places, if I may.
Okay.
Well, a world tour, if you will.
Well, because I've spent 5 months in Finland, so that's my only real out of the United States experience. And other than the cold, I think I would like it there. I love my time there. The Finns have a no-nonsense attitude and a way of interacting, and I think it goes beyond the language. I don't think it's just because, I mean, most Finns speak English, and they speak it very well. But it's
as
still
they
a
should.
Oh my God.
God's language.
It's still a second language, or even a third, because a lot of them speak Swedish, and some of them even speak Russian. But so I don't think it's just their way of using English that comes across as being forward or straightforward and no nonsense. I think in general their interactions are direct, and I really enjoyed that about them. I understand that it's a semi-socialist country in a lot of ways. Socialized medicine. High taxes.
Rob's clutching his pearls.
Value-added tax on a lot of things. But Scandinavian countries always rank high in quality of life.
Right.
Measurements. And I see...
It's all the vodka.
Well, that
maybe
helps.
It's all the social helps.
But there are certain things they hold as... They have an identity. Like, going to sauna is a big deal for them.
Yeah.
And they know how to relax. They know, okay, I worked hard during the day, but now this is my time. And they get their holiday, their summer holiday, their winter holiday. We don't really do enough of that here. It's
no doubt.
And it's not here. It's not go 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 because I'm driving for something. It's just go
just do
go
it.
Go just because that's what
right.
we're doing.
We're expected to do it. Yeah.
Right. And.
Yeah, I'm all for the 3-day work week.
Yeah. So
sign me up.
Finland would be an option. I've heard great things about Australia, though I've never been there, so I can't really speak to that. I've been told I would fit in very well in Germany. My ex-girlfriend's told me that. She said, I think you would really love the regimented society.
That's classic.
And then, of course, Ireland, because I would fit in from a visual sense.
I'm fascinated by your Finland answer, because I was going to answer your Finland just to one-up your Finland.
Well, I spent a lot of time there, and I loved it there. There's a lot of things they do well.
I feel like here we're all elbowing each other to get ahead, and all we're just getting is elbowed, you know?
Well, yeah, it's the Beanie Babies. To me, it's Beanie Babies. We're elbowing in to get to these meaningless things that
right,
once
right,
we get
right.
them, we're like, well,
crass consumerism.
Right. And
yeah. No, that's totally true.
I always get mad at my English buddy would be like, you know, you Americans, you just don't travel the world. You just don't have an interest in world travel. I was like, screw you, buddy. You have 6 weeks of vacation. And going to Spain is skipping a hop away.
Right.
You know, I got 2 weeks, and,
right.
and all
hey,
my airfares is
I've been to
dollars.
Illinois.
Right. Right.
Well, and that, and there's something to be said for that, and it's not understood until... I mean, I still don't have an appreciation of how vast the United States is.
Right.
And how long it takes to get from one place to the next.
Yeah.
I mean, Europe...
Drive across it sometime.
Yeah. But... I don't know that I necessarily want to leave the United States, but I don't like the direction we're going. I don't feel like we're all pulling in the same direction. We're certainly not.
Right.
And I don't see anybody moving to fix it.
Preach on, brother.
So get me the hell out of here. All right, so, Jerry, what about you?
Somalia?
Where are you going?
Yeah, Somalia. I mean, it's a libertarian paradise, right? I'll put a link to that video in the show notes. That's pretty funny. Australia is very nice, although they don't take kindly to foreigners.
They used to like Americans, though.
Oh, they love Americans, but you can't move there unless you have a job already.
All right, well.
Which, you know, it's not a totally unreasonable position, I guess. If you're going to use government force to enforce something, then that's probably a good thing to enforce. So it means they don't have a lot of problems with, people who are using the safety net as a hammock. They put beetroot on their hamburgers, which is very tasty.
Never had it. Although that was a guy in the movie Twins. Beetroot.
Beetroot, yeah.
So, allow me to stop you in your list of countries.
Okay.
In a way that suits my point that I'm about to make.
Okay.
So I find it pleasing inside of myself and warming like a warm brandy that a lot of the choices that you have made.
Well, I haven't made a choice yet. I was just commenting on what he said about Australia.
But all of your countries, I would say, are much more leftist and socialist than the one you're living in right now. Finland, Ireland.
My choice is to stay in the United States and fix what's broke here.
Sure, I think that's all of us, because it's like you love what you love the one you're with.
Well, I still believe that on the spectrum of freedom, we are still defining one edge of that.
That's nice. That's good.
Let me tell you something about Finland that maybe I didn't make clear why I like it. Sure, you may say, well, it's more socialist, but they expect people to do a job and do it well.
Right.
None of this. You get everything.
I completely agree, and this is what comes down to my like I think we scoff and we hate the wrong things. I think we should scoff not doing the job that you said you were going to do, or not showing up to work reliably, or whatever it is. And it's like those are the things we all need to come together with and say that's not acceptable, because that's what the Finns are doing, right?
Yes, and they will tell you.
Right.
And we're not afraid to tell you.
And we've lost that. We're too busy worrying about, oh, you're a gun owner, or you hate gays, or you're gay, or whatever it is. We're hating the wrong things. Let's all get together and put all our hate.
There was a politician
tractor beam.
There's been more than one who said Americans were lazy. And they were roasted for saying that.
Right. Because we like to tell ourselves myths about ourselves.
Right. We're the greatest country on earth.
That's right.
And if you don't believe that, I'll help you pack. I think we heard that in this very, very establishment.
Yeah, we were right over there.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think you said it very succinctly. We're with the one we love. Warts and all.
Let's fix it. Be a podcast.
Yes, one podcast at a time. So I want to thank all of our listeners. I want to thank GC Food and Brewery for hosting us once again. And I want to extend an invitation to our new listeners to send us some feedback. And like us on Facebook, or send us a tweet on Twitter, and check out our YouTube channel. We've got some videos out there that we produced last year. And as always, visit our website, MidwestPeaceProcess.com, for all the greatest content we can provide, including MC Robbie Rob's...
We still need to watch that.
2013 year in review. It's quite entertaining. I would encourage everybody to check that out.
Before you completely sign off, while you're offering thanks, I would like to thank the Polar Star Coast Guard icebreaker for rescuing those geniuses who got stuck in the Antarctic ice that wasn't supposed to be there when three other countries could not rescue them because they also got stuck in the ice that wasn't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Let's measure that little carbon footprint, you geniuses.
Right. How much diesel did those ships burn out there?
Proving that there's no ice that you got stuck in. Oops.
One last dig. All right. So I guess that's it. We'll see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
1 week of every year is designated National Brotherhood Week. This is just one of many such weeks honoring various worthy causes. One of my favorites is National Make Fun of the Handicapped Week, which Frank Fontaine and Jerry Lewis are in charge of, as you know. During National Brotherhood Week, various special events are arranged to drive home the message of brotherhood. This year, for example, on the first day of the week, Malcolm X was killed, which gives you an idea of how effective the whole thing is. I'm sure we all agree that we ought to love one another, and I know there are people in the world who do not love their fellow human beings, and I hate people like that. Here's a song about National Brotherhood Week. Oh, the white folks hate the black folks, and the black folks hate the white folks. To hate all but the right folks is an old established rule. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, Lena Horne and Sheriff Clark are dancing cheek to cheek. It's fun to eulogize the people you despise, as long as you don't let them in your school. The poor folks hate the rich folks, and the rich folks hate the poor folks. All of my folks hate all of your folks. It's American as apple pie. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, New Yorkers love the Puerto Ricans 'cause it's very chic. Step up and shake the hand of someone you can't stand. You can tolerate him if you try. Protestants hate the Catholics, and the Catholics hate the Protestants, and the Hindus hate the Muslims, and everybody hates the Jews. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, it's national everyone smile at one anotherhood week. Be nice to people who are inferior to you. It's only for a week, so have no fear. Be grateful that it doesn't last all year.